Ballads and tortillas. And hey, folks, we are live. My name is Walt, and this is Vamp Podcast, Indie Creators Spotlight. And today we are talking to one long timer, one new timer, and I'm faking a good game. So to start off, we're gonna just welcome back long time and frequent co-host, Mr. Nick Garber, CEO of Apogee Comics. How are you, sir?
I'm good, sir. How are you doing?
Trying to stay out of trouble. There might be some weirdness. You know, I got some mouth trauma going on, but we're working through it the best way we can with sports tape and massive amounts of caffeine.
Well, you're looking great.
I
all things considered.
Yeah, you know, it's living the high life. Definitely living the high life. what's that?
I'm not gonna lie. I thought that was a shadow from your headset. I didn't know that something was going on there. I didn't make the assumption.
Yeah, it's a long story, very uninteresting, and it would take away from the awesomeness that is Stephen Kemp. Did I say that correctly, sir?
Yes, you did, Stephen Kemp.
And why don't you, for people who are just joining, give us a little background into who you are and what you're doing here on the show today.
I'm an author who's been working on little projects here and there. You know, I have a normal day job just like anybody else.
You go right ahead. Do you?
Oh no, I heard. I think I heard myself in the background. No idea.
Oh yeah, I was bringing up the YouTube channel. I'm sorry, Steven.
Okay.
In case there's comments and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I've been working as a writer for the last couple of years, working on things like modules for Dungeons and Dragons, things like that. But I've been a longtime fan of comic books. I've been writing them since I was in middle school. But you know, when you're in middle school, you don't have the you don't have the funds and the platform to figure out how to distribute, how to print, and stuff like that. And turns out, when you're an adult, you don't have those things either.
Right on.
So we're fortunate enough to live in this era of crowdfunding. So here we are with Indiegogo.
And I definitely wish this existed when I first started with Phantom Hawk, because it probably would have failed miserably.
For the past, I'd say, so I've always been fascinated by comic book characters and stuff like that, but I never had a lot of, pocket money when I was a kid. I would get into some of the older stuff that I'd be able to find, not only around the house, but every once in a while, I'd purchase one. So, a lot of the, original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, some sporadic parts of the Archie run and stuff like that, as well as reading some of my brother Brendan's X-Men comic books, which were a big favorite of mine.
Nice. Now, you mentioned you've written for Dungeons and Dragons. Did you actually write for Wizards of the Coast?
No. I wrote for another company that sold modules that are like, we're not Wizards of the Coast. We're not using any of the copyrighted material, but this will definitely fit into the game. It's all technically legal.
So you were writing third party. Now, was that during a time when they, after the OGL, for those of our fans out there who know what that is?
I don't know what you mean by OGL.
Oh, really? Oh, so you must have gone early then.
This was really more for Pathfinder.
Okay.
The intent was to use it with Pathfinder.
Yeah. Basically, what happened was the Wizards of the Coast, they wanted to release the third edition of Dungeons and Dragons before Pathfinder had ever hit. And they were looking for a way to cut their cost but keep interest in the product. So they opened up a license so that anybody could publish for Dungeons and Dragons under certain criteria. And eventually what had happened was enough people got into it where Pathfinder came around and started doing that sort of craziness. And it opened up like a whole huge can of the publishing industry for role-playing games. So that's pretty neat that you got into that. So what years are we talking, like 2005, 2006, somewhere around there?
And this was only a couple of modules. And that was probably 2012. It wasn't that long
ago. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So you were pretty recent. Nice. Right on. Well, when the show wraps up, I'm sure you can give us some links so that some people, if they want to check out some of your older stuff, they can check that out. And then,
you know, I'll check and see if it can be found anywhere, because the company that I was working for actually no longer exists.
Oh, okay.
So right on. I don't even know if you can find that on DriveThruRPG.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. DriveThru is usually the clearinghouse where you find everything. So
comics. I mean, it's one stop shopping for everything.
Fandom. Absolutely. That's where I found Nick.
Yeah, they just sell him right there on the site.
Yeah, but I've depreciated in value, unfortunately.
We don't judge. It's all good in the hood. So the most important question of the hour that usually determines the fate of political regimes and so forth. Were you a spinner rack guy, or did you go to comic shops?
Comic shops.
Really?
Yeah, I was one of those guys because the thing, like I said, I had a collection of comics. A lot of them were hand-me-downs. Like there's some titles that I struggle to remember. There was just some really weird stuff. I don't know if you remember, and to this day I don't know how to pronounce it. If it might be Saber, it might be Sabre, things like that. Do you remember that? Do you remember that book?
No.
Who put it out? Do you remember?
No, I don't. This was years and years and years ago. I had an old Foley's bag just full of these comic books. So I had these weird hand-me-down stuff that I would just read. Because they were all I had. But if I was going to go get a new comic book, that was in a comic book store setting. There was one not too far down the main strip in my hometown. That's defunct now. There isn't even one in that town anymore. What's that?
I think I found it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Was the protagonist called Black Star Blood?
Black Star Blood. No, I think his name was Saber or Sabre, one or the other.
Well, that's a novel. I'm still looking. There's a lot of names here.
He's a black guy with a headband.
Yeah. Saber, published in August 1978, which is the month and year I was born. I expect gifts.
There we go.
By Don McGregor, published by Eclipse Comics, graphic novel. Looks pretty cool.
Oh, wow. It's an Eclipse comic, huh?
Yeah. Are they even still around?
Maybe. I'm not sure. Interesting. So when did you said you were writing comic scripts in middle school. When did you start getting like serious into the biz? Was it after the 2012 love affair with Dungeons and Dragons?
Into writing, it was around that time where I decided that I was going to start building a portfolio. But serious into comic books wasn't really until this project, because Brendan, my brother, has been a driving force in this, where he saw that the market was changing. And how you can get a comic book out there, the methods by which you can, were expanding, and he saw people having success on Indiegogo. And that's when, we had been talking back and forth about a few different ideas that we had until, Jeremy called me. Sorry. I was thinking about this response, for Jeremy on Geeks and Gamers, when Bren called me, he had this idea for the Ballad of Dusty Tortillas, which wasn't even that at the time. We just had the name Dusty Tortillas,
which is awesome. Did it just spring to life fully formed like that, or did it come?
Bren has a story that he tells about how he got the name. Steve, you want to tell him that story?
He was literally eating breakfast.
As far as I've heard a story enough in another podcast where I think I can give a rough gist. He just got out of the army. He was working in the petrochemical industry down in South Texas, and he was getting his morning breakfast tacos, chorizo and egg, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And usually the tortillas are kind of dusted in flour and cornmeal. Well, I guess on this particular day they were over dusted. So when he got it, he's like, man, these are some dusty ass tortillas. And I guess that light bulb went off in his head, according to the legend.
According to the ballad.
According to the ballad. As the ballad once said.
That is amazing. Now, when you guys are working on this comic, do you all use like Southwestern accents?
I do when I'm drawing it, and it's only me in the office. So.
Do I not have one now? I can never tell.
No, you definitely do not.
No, you okay. If I didn't know better, Steven, you know, I didn't think you would be from where you're at, you know, so.
I'm actually Canadian. Don't tell anybody.
You sound like the old prospector on Blazing Saddles.
Well, she.
Do Canadians have cowboys?
Yes, they do.
And are they called cowboys?
No.
Oh.
They're called Mounties.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother thing.
Try not to offend the Canadians because we're not going to buy our stuff, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, they love their Mounties. I don't know. The only stuff I know about Mounties comes from Dudley Do Right.
If yeah, I'm not touching fair. That one. I got a couple of Canadian friends, and they'll be like, cannot believe you did not have me on the show.
Sorry.
I didn't know. I didn't know.
Is that a hot button issue? Like, is that?
I don't know. Okay. I've never met a Canadian who I've really gotten it like into it with. So I can't say if it's a hot button issue or not, but I'm not going to press it. Just, I don't want to press my luck. So once you had the name, right, and you know your brother had the name, and he said, "Hot damn, King Salami! This is that I must produce this with my brother." Where did the process go from there? Now, you were the writer on this, correct?
Brendan and I are co-writing it.
Co-writing. Okay. Yes. Now, when you guys are working,
Kelsey brothers or the Russos.
I just want to say that when you guys have the amazing Dusty Tortilla film, I just want to be, you know, in the credits somewhere. When you guys are working together, do you guys script? Do you do a full script or do you do a loose script? Oops, sorry, my dog. Do you do a loose script so that giving the artist a little more room and freedom?
When we script things out, if there's anything that we absolutely have to have in the individual panels, then it gets listed. Something that I hope I've conveyed well enough to you, Nick, is that, you know, the visual stylings, you know, are all up to you. And we've talked about that several times, how the creation of a comic book is a very collaborative process.
Yeah, I've always compared it to a symphony, you know, so you got a lot of things going on at once, and if it's done right, it's just beautiful. But if one thing's off, and you know,
you really notice it.
Yeah, it really comes across, and everyone can pick it out. When I got the script, when I read the script, I thought maybe Steven had been writing for years and probably for some other indies or, you know, even some higher tier companies, you know, because the script was very polished, which is a breath of fresh air, especially in the indie business, because usually it goes through several editorial processes back and forth. I didn't have a whole lot of questions, you know, when I was drawing the page or the couple of pages that I drew. You know, there was a lot of information on there, and there was a lot of reference material. You know, hey, I want it to look like this, or this is kind of the setting, and this is what this should look like, and this is what this character should look like. And, you know, so as an artist, that really helps me out. But I also had a lot of creative freedom to put my own, you know, my own little touch on it, you know, my own little style. So it's been a very pleasurable experience. And I don't usually get to work with other writers. Usually I'm writing and drawing my own stuff. So I do like being able to stretch my wings, you know, and get someone else's writing that I get to interpret. Oh man, the whiskey's really kicking in already.
We don't blame you.
Well, we're talking Russian, so you know, of course, you know, cowboys were drinking it like 9 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know that we were going to talk about what time it was, what time of day. We're going to talk about the whiskey too.
I should have waited for Whiskey Wednesday, but you know, Tuesday works.
Yeah. You know, we're just it's all about time zones.
Toasty Tuesday.
Yeah. Right? You got to do what you
have to do. Yeah. It's Saturday night, 8 o'clock somewhere, right? That's how the planet works.
Absolutely. So when you guys, once you guys had the script hammered together, you know, you found Nick. Can you talk about how you guys fell in together?
Well, it was actually Brendan. It was during the Army Navy game, and everyone was putting their, you know, all of his vets were putting up our cool guy picks. You know, go Army beat Navy or go Navy beat Army. My official stance is go Army beat Navy, which we've done 2 years in a row.
I don't judge.
So, sorry, Dad. I know you were Navy, but you've lost 2 years straight. He saw my profile pic. I think I came up in like Facebook's people you may know. And that's just kind of how it happened. Yeah, he added me as a friend. And then now these are his words. He stalked my page and saw my artwork. And then he messaged me and we just kind of got to talking. And, you know, we just kind of built a report. And then next thing you know, he was like, hey, man, I'm working on this comic. And then he told me the name. He's like, yeah, I'm working on this. Me and my brother have written this comic, and it's called The Ballad of Dusty Tortillas. And I'm like, you don't have to say anymore. I'm in.
You're damn right it is.
Damn right it is. I mean, the name alone. And he's like, no, but let me explain. I'm like, you really don't have to. I'm in. You know, let's talk numbers.
The funny thing about that name is that in the earliest phases, we were talking about calling it something else. The character was always going to be Dusty Tortillas. But we're thinking about making reference to, I don't know, like a Louis L'Amour novel that would have a little bit more romanticized of a title. And I remember thinking, if this book was ever on a shelf, just having the names in big lettering, Dusty Tortillas on the front, there's absolutely nothing else like that. Which I think has been key to pretty much to a lot of the interest that we've gotten so far, because it is such a strange but memorable name.
It is, and the thing that it invokes, even without seeing the artwork, is that you know, it invokes fun, but you know, because of other things, especially the Netflix show that's on right now. You know, you get the sense that you're going to have fun reading this no matter what, because if somebody took the time to craft a name like this, there's going to be much more than just the name in the book. Can you talk a little bit about the art, Nick? Some of the art direction that went in behind this? And please talk about our favorite subjects, not the coffee, the guns.
The guns, because the setting is 1901, which technically isn't the Wild West, but in certain rural areas in the country, time has not caught up.
Exactly.
And so we got an interesting hybrid of Old West mixed with, you know, early 20th century. Now the guns aren't exact replicas of things, but I made sure they had a Western look.
Gotcha.
You know, they look like the Colt Navy. You know, trying to remember the specific year that it came out, but I'm just going to skip that part. It was like an 1883 Colt Navy, which is usually what you find in most Westerns, you know. And later on in these pages, I'm going to throw in maybe a little bit more contemporary pistols. They're still going to be wheel guns, six shooters, but, you know, like a 38 revolver, that's going to not look as Western. So I kind of want to bring that into it, you know, and show that this is kind of a hybrid world, you know, where we have the tail end of this Old West that's kind of been stretched out a little bit further in the town of Melville, you know, because it's in rural Kansas, you know, and they don't want any big city people come over here and corrupting their town. You know, so that's where I've been going with the art direction. And it's definitely stylistically how I'm handling it is a lot different than, you know, for people that have followed me or, you know, dare I say fans, you know, some of the earlier works, you know, like Crimson Guardians or Phantom Hawk, shameless plug.
Do it.
I'm going to put a Phantom Hawk like bounty wanted poster somewhere in there. It'll be hidden. So that'll be nice. Because I got to support my boy and,
service your fans, man. Service your fans.
You know, put those little Easter eggs in here. Even though it's not technically part of the Apogee Prime universe, you know, it's still a little history that I would like, with the permission of Steven and Brennan, to kind of add it to the lore. you know, of the in and make it this all-inclusive universe. You know me, I'm always I'm a big picture guy. So
it's going to be a part of the Apogee Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Yeah, the ACU.
Do you have a time traveling character?
We do now. Sorry.
Not really, because as a rule, as a huge fan of like The Flash and how screwed up timelines can get, you know, damn it, Barry. I try and stay away from time travel, and I've talked to Andrew Colas. I hope I said his last name right. Who's the editor in chief now at Apogee. We discussed that at length about how time travel is really kind of it can be a cheat and it could also really paint you in a corner. So we try and stay away from that. But you know, I would love to bring up like looking at like an old Melville newspaper and like Phantom Hawk or something like that. Like maybe found it in the trash or something or in a museum, you know.
You could go with looper logic. The only way to explain time travel is to not explain time travel.
Yeah. See, I mean, that's a good point. A good way to handle it. So, yeah, but art direction, I really reduced cross-hatching. I took cross-hatching right out of it, which felt really weird for me because I have that 90s Jim Lee, Todd McFarlane style, you know, where, you know, what should I put there? You know what? I'm going to cross-hatch the hell out of it.
Right on. Yeah, for looking at the Indiegogo page, not a lot of cross-hatching. You got deep digital inking, and then you got shadows. Looks like those are digital as well. And
that's all analog. That's all
brushed. Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, because it looks really good.
Well, I've really been practicing on the inking. Two reasons. One, I like to expand my horizons, which is a good bullshit answer. I'm trying to save money on not hiring inkers. Not that I don't want to hire them. It's just that, you know, putting a book together is expensive. So if I can cut costs where I can, especially on projects that I'm specifically working on myself, I'll do that. And I've actually found something therapeutic in the inking as I don't have when I'm penciling, because penciling, like my brain's just going. It's like, okay, how's this going to look? Where am I going to set up the camera angle? You know, I'm more of a director of photography at that point where, you know, when I'm inking and I don't have a film correlation job to give it, but it's something that I can kind of get lost in, you know, when I'm doing it. I throw on some music, I get the ink out, I get the brush out, I get the nib and quill out. And then I just start going to work and I embellish and add depth and shading and tone where I can. Or like if I forgot to draw something, you know, that's a good time for me to add it. Like, oh, you know what? I probably should have thickened this line, or I should have added a shadow here or whatever. So yeah, it's all analog. And when it's scanned in, it's scanned in really well where you can't even tell.
Right on. Yeah, it looks amazing. So before we go any further, and just so that we don't drift too far astray and not give people a look into the Ballad of Dusty Tortillas, can we get if you guys were trapped in an elevator with, you know, 100 Dunkin' Donuts crazed teenagers who were screaming for the Ballad of Dusty Tortillas, could you give them an elevator pitch on what the story's about and where you plan to take it in the comic?
Okay, I've done this thought experiment before. How many bullets do I have?
You have 6.
Okay. What's
in a 6-shooter? Unless you have a lever action rifle, in which case you have the pistol and the rifle, so do what you got to do.
Yeah. Okay, so quick elevator pitch. The Ballad of Dusty Tortillas is a Western set in Melville, Kansas, 1901, the fictitious town of Melville, Kansas. And it is about a person named Dusty Baker, aka Dusty Tortillas, who grew up fatherless in in rural Kansas, and he was often teased by his contemporaries growing up because he didn't have a father, and he worked in his mother's tortilleria. So instead of calling him by his surname Dusty Baker, he was there known as Dusty Tortillas. Instead of letting it get to him, it became a badge of honor. And as he came of age in the town, he took up as a gunsmith's apprentice. However, as fate would have it, he was there in the moments of an assassination attempt of the mayor of his town. And when he stepped in, he started down a fateful path, in which he would uncover a conspiracy which threatens the lives of everyone in the entire town. And now it's time for Dusty to make a decision. Will he become the hero that he was meant to be, or fade into obscurity?
Fantastic. Very nicely done. That was I'm kind of disappointed in myself that I didn't have some sort of music playing there, because that was pretty good.
Ballad, if you will, on the Indiegogo, the video, and that was done by Brendan, right? Didn't he put that music together?
Yeah, he did. That is an original piece of music. He's always been a very talented musician.
Nice.
And also, I need to throw out there that this is a veteran collaboration. Not only is Apogee Comics a veteran-owned business, but Brendan is in the military. He's serving our country, and so you got two vets that are working on this. You know, so if you love your country, buy the book.
Yeah, that's actually why he's not here today.
Right now, he's doing his physical training. He's at PT, probably running 5 miles and puking his guts up.
Yeah.
So PTs are regular shorts.
Yeah. Oh, probably the new Army PT uniform, which is.
Yeah, I see. I saw.
I love my silkies. I mean, that is probably, besides the Whoopi, that was probably the best piece of kit that I've ever been given.
Right on, It's tough to say goodbye.
Because of companies like Scroll Factory, I'm never in shortage of silkies now. So I have my scrolled silkies like back in the day. I got the hack and chop ones that they have, which has a skull and the tomahawk and the Sykes Fairborn
bayonet.
Yeah, the bayonet. You know all the Ranger visual aids. You know, and tools.
I got you. Definitely. So we're looking at the Indiegogo page, and you got a 3,000 fixed goal. You're at 1,821 now with 25 days left. Looks like 36 backers, of which I am a backer.
I'm working on it.
Can you talk a little bit about Indiegogo versus Kickstarter? I mean, I know my personal views of why you would use Indiegogo or Kickstarter, but can you talk about how it went into how you were factoring in success for the comic?
For this particular one, now this is our first crowdfunding campaign. It's not Nick's first crowdfunding campaign, but it is our first crowdfunding campaign. But using other books as a model and understanding where we were as far as our our audience, our following, our the platforms that we had available. One thing that we did definitely want to do is we wanted this book one, The Ballad of Dusty Tortillas, to almost be a sample. It's shorter. It's a 24 page full color comic book, and you can actually get into the story for $5. Where these have a tendency to be a little longer form, just because. With crowdfunding comic books, it can take so long to get product into hand. You know, you don't want to, you know, just flip through in 10 minutes and be done. But we also respected the fact that we're nobody. We're absolutely nobody.
That's not true. You're somebody to somebody.
That's true. I'm somebody to approximately five
people. I have a feeling that after this book, you guys will be, well, I wouldn't say launched into superstardom, but you guys will start developing your reputation, your name, and we're already kind of doing that. You guys are. The name's getting out there. People are enjoying just, you know, not the name alone is what's drawing people in, you know.
Oh, yeah.
My contribution is to just kind of keep them there. But, you know, the story's great. The story's really, really well written, and it's got a lot of you know, it's like hook grabbing stuff going on in it, you know, where it'll turn you into a long time reader. And what I really loved is that Stephen and Brendan had told me that you can jump, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you can jump into this at any point and not feel left out. You know,
with the general style of how we have a tendency to do comic books, definitely. Because I think a good comic book, especially a 22-page, 24-page format like that, you got to be able to pick it up off the stands. There's nothing more frustrating for me as a young comic book reader when I would get like a random issue 230 and be completely lost. Like it needs to contextualize itself.
Saw that a lot in the late 80s and 90s when you'd pick up a book from like Marvel or DC, and it would mostly be a lot of captions referring you to other books, and it didn't really tell you or try and catch you up. It's like, hey man, if you want to know, just go buy some other stuff.
That is rampant today. I'm trying to figure out if I've ever been referred to a variant cover, because that feels like the kind of tomfoolery that would happen today.
Lord knows I've got enough of those. I fell for that gimmick.
Say that.
I fell for that gimmick, the variant covers.
Yeah.
Red foil, yellow foil. I mean, oh God, I gotta have them all.
the ones that connected into a giant mural.
Oh, those were so cool though. And I feel bad because I think I've chucked most of those. I'm like, what do I need like 5 copies of this freaking book for? And just in my stupid youth.
Right. That's what happens to your N64 too. I fell into that same trap.
Oh no,
I had some amazing games for that system. I had some amazing games for my Super Nintendo. I was just like, this is done. PlayStation's a thing.
And now Nintendo is re-releasing them and making a bucket load.
Yep. But basically, we're thinking we wanted a easily attainable goal, and we definitely wanted people to be able to get into this comic book at an affordable rate, so that the most people possible could enjoy The Ballad of Dusty Tortillas along with us. And based upon this, now we talked about exactly how long this individual story was going to be, and what we settled on early on was, if this was a comic book in your local comic book shop today, this first story would take place in 5 books. So that's just an idea of the general length. Based upon interest in this campaign, reactions to people for getting their floppy, this 24-page floppy this summer, things like that, we're going to revisit the formatting. The structure of the story is going to be the same, but the formatting may change to more of a graphic novel later on. If there's a little bit more demand for it, people feel like they want more of the story all at once rather than waiting, up to 4 months to get product into hand.
Right on. That's pretty cool. Now, with people, we're going to definitely put this in the show notes and put the link in so that people can check out the Indiegogo page and check out what you guys are doing. If there was a movie or a property out there right now that would most likely like give people a feel of what you're going for, what spaghetti westerns? We talking like Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood? What are we talking here?
Nick says it best.
The way I've pitched this book is, it's Blazing Saddles is as if it was directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Yes, that sounds amazing.
Well, I mean, without the blatant racism, but
yeah.
But as far as the violence, if you're a fan of like over the top, like an arm wound shouldn't bleed as much as I draw it bleeding, and you see that on the Indiegogo on that page. So there is some, I guess we'll call it hyper violence or excessive violence. There is some sexuality, sexual content as far as like risque clothes, because it's a town almost lost in time. It hasn't quite caught up to the 20th century. So you're going to have that burlesque, house of ill repute, type clothing, and the puffy dresses and the corsets and things like that. And then and you're going to have some comedy in there. There's definitely some comedy. So it's got a little bit of, if you're a fan of Blazing Saddles and you're a fan of Quentin Tarantino and you're a fan of just Westerns in general, you will not be disappointed in this book.
That is amazing. You just made my morning.
It would really, because the name and other names in the book have a tendency to be so ridiculous, Brendan and I we wanted comedy to be part of it, and how we thought best to express not necessarily a majority of the comedy, but definitely an angle is splatstick. We wanted the violence to be so in your face, so visceral, so over the top that at points you can't do anything but laugh.
Please tell me you are going to copyright that term immediately.
Splatstick, splatsticks. What was the first splatstick film? That was a while back. It's Peter David. Peter Lord of the Rings boy.
Oh,
Jackson.
Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, he was an early splatstick guy.
Right on. That's really good. That's pretty cool. I like the idea of Blazing Saddles meets Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it just came to me when I was drawing it, and I was like, and when they told me the overall plot and where the series is going, I'm like, man, that's the first thing that popped in my head was Blazing Saddles.
Well, but
when it popped into my head, it was as if it was directed by Quentin Tarantino because of the violence. And I'm like, oh, yes, I'm so in.
Well, it definitely has to be a factor in it because the way the marketing and the hook is concerned, because it has to be humorous in nature, not fully, but at least to a large degree because of characters like Dusty and the weird names that got put in. Because as soon as we knew that we could put in a character named Dusty Tortillas, as soon as we knew that that was going to be part of the theming of the book, that's when a lot of other names came in.
The like naming conventions for these characters is it's something completely different. It's either very tongue in cheek or it's very on the nose.
Yeah,
it gives you a lot of foreshadowing to who these characters are as people and how they're going to interact based on their names.
Yeah, you've got the mayor. Everybody believes him to be a corrupt politician. And that he may live a lifestyle beyond his means. So he got the name Fuller Pockets. And then you have Sheriff Pat Trousers and his daughter Misty.
Oh God,
Misty Trousers! Isn't that awesome?
A lot of the name conventions, we were throwing spaghetti at the wall. An early one that got passed up, we were going to have we're going to have a person named Fred Hole, a writing companion. But that didn't go anywhere.
This is like the third podcast I've been on, and I've heard that name, you know, that we've done together, and it still cracks me up. The Fred Hole, I'm just like,
oh my god!
Being an artist, just the visual representation that's like popping into my head and how I would draw that. It makes me laugh even more.
I actually
drew him watching stuff and I'd be like Fred Hole and just crack up randomly. And my wife is like, what are you laughing at? I'm like, I'll tell you later.
let me give you an image because I don't have my early drawing of him with me now. But do you remember Buckaroo Banzai Across the Ninth Dimension?
Oh God, I love that movie. It's a classic.
Absolutely. Okay. Jeff Goldblum's character.
Oh my goodness.
That's pretty much what I drew for Fred Hole.
Oh, that's awesome. And Jeff is no stranger to the Western. He played the sleazy gambler in Silverado.
Oh yeah.
With the little Derringer, a little two shot.
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
Oh, it's so great. And it still holds up. Every time I watch it, I'm just amazed at how well that movie holds up.
That's awesome.
Costner's early movies. When he was a young man, not like he is now in The Highwayman, which, shameless plug, if you haven't seen it, go check that out. It's awesome.
Sweet.
I didn't. What's he doing?
He and Woody Harrelson did a Netflix movie called The Highwayman. And it's about the two former Texas Rangers that were instrumental in locating and gunning down Bonnie and Clyde.
And I'm over here watching Unicorn Store.
Yeah, I'm ashamed that you're watching anything with Brie Larson right now.
I seen all three.
No, but it was great. I had a lot of great history in there too. Like I really wasn't. This is like the untold true story of, you know, how Bonnie and Clyde met their demise, and they're two former Texas Rangers. I had no idea there was a point in Texas history where the Texas Rangers weren't a thing. You know, but they were disbanded for a short period of time during Ma Ferguson's gubernatorial, you know, run. And so, you know, you just watch the movie. I don't want to give anything away. It's really awesome. Costner nails it. Woody Harrelson is great paired up with him, and they play off each other. The chemistry is great. The comedy, there is comedy in there, you know, but it's really kind of like subtle. So like if you're not paying attention, you'll miss it.
Right on.
It's great. I can't speak any more highly about it than I already am. I put it on thinking I was going to take a nap, and I did not take a nap. I was just kind of like glued to the TV for 2 hours and 3 minutes or whatever the running time is.
Entered into my personal viewing queue.
Oh,
so the only thing I'm not really seeing on this Indiegogo page is the monogrammed logoed serape. Is that going to be a thing?
If it could be one of the stretch goals. We're not really
right on. Right on. So with 25 days left to go, if somebody decided to come in and they said, I have to get into the Ballad of Dusty Tortillas. I need a little, but I don't need a lot. What do you feel the sweet spot is on the pledge for this? Where do you think that most people will find their big taste that will get them in the door for Dusty Tortilla?
Well, I mean, if they can't give a lot and they just need to get into the door, I think that the Telegram is a very good value. That's our digital download tier at $5. I think your best value.
I got to say the single action.
You think so?
I think so. You get a physical copy and then you get the digital copy for those that, you know, want both. So you get a little something extra. And I know digital is a big thing and everybody likes reading digital, you know, but I think it's more of a, they don't want to screw up the physical copy, you know, because collectors don't stop collecting.
I've been there.
So, you know, I think the single action, when I tell people to back something, obviously I tell them to back the higher tier because I want this thing funded, but, the Gunslinger is really good also. It's got mm-hmm. a lot of great stuff in there. It's got a signed physical copy of the book signed by me. You get the pinup poster, which is really, really cool. You know,
yeah, that pinup poster is tight.
Yeah, that's Miss Myrtle Lynx.
It was fun to draw, and it was more fun to have like my wife and kids walk in while I'm drawing. I'm like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's for the comic.
No, really, it is. It is.
No, really, it is. You know, and I got pictures of Salma Hayek from Wild Wild West. You know, I got all my reference pictures up, and it's all, you know, Western girls in corsets. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, research. It's part of the job.
But that is going through transitional time.
Yeah. For me, for my money, the single action is good. The Telegram is also really good. You know, if you don't want to be very, you know, very committal to it, you know, but you still want something really cool and you want that thank you and you want to check out the book, the Telegram is really good. But you know, and for the bigger spenders, you know, you have the quick draw that gets you a piece of original art from the book. You know, the 11x17 page, mm-hmm. Signed by me. You know, but who the hell am I? But the really cool thing is the posse up, and there's like one slot left on that. So, and what that entails is you become a character in the book. You'll be short lived because I'm going to kill you in a most horrific Western way, but your likeness will be put into Dusty's posse, you know, as he goes through these trials and tribulations through the series.
Yeah. Well, just the first book.
Just the first book. The first book, I'm going to kill you dead. You know, because we want to have another posse up for issue 2, 3, 4, 5, 500. You know, when we start getting into the Ballad of Krusty Tortillas, always an old man.
That'll be the comeback tour. The Unforgiven story.
Yeah, and then I'm thinking about the timeline. You know, when he's an old man, because he's about 18 at this point. You know, in 1901. So you know, you add 40 years, we're getting right into World War II. So
I didn't even think of that.
Right.
Maybe some Indiana Jones-esque, you know, Colonel of the OSS type storylines. I mean, you could get nuts.
Well, I mean, like in his prime time, he's got his man body, he's got his adult brain. You're in the middle of World War One.
That too, yeah.
Yeah.
In a little few bit years, more. You are in World War I. So there's other stories you can tell with Dusty, and I just thought of this now, you know, now that you brought it up. So there's a lot we could do with these characters and as they progress, but the first hurdle is getting the first issue out.
Right. Dick Tracy. Let's go full Dick Tracy, put him in space.
the communication wristwatch and all that. I was a fan of Dick Tracy back in the day. I mean, when there was still a comic strip in the newspapers. Do newspapers even exist anymore? I don't know. But
so if people want to find you, Stephen, and stalk you on the internet, what's the best way to do that? Oh, God, I killed Stephen.
Go to your local CVS. I'll be buying cough medicine. That's where I am. Now, you want to check us out. We're actually simultaneously, in order to engage the audience, building a YouTube channel, which is Wayward Comics, which is our studio name. You could say that the Ballad of Dusty Tortillas was created in Wayward Comics Studios. But it's now a joint venture and being published through Apogee Comic Books.
Damn right.
Yeah. So you find us on Wayward Comics. I don't know if you want me to drop a link so that you can put it into the.
Absolutely, I wholeheartedly encourage that.
And we're live right now, right?
So yes, we are. So don't get too crazy.
Yeah, let me find
it. Not like last night where I'm having to take my shirt off for the fan base.
Well, you know, we got a backer, you know, and you.
I like to think that my topless, you know, portrayal on last night's podcast kind of helped with that one backer, but I really hope that's not the case.
I mean, that's a result, you know. I don't know what else you can say about that.
I really need to start shaving my chest and do some push-ups.
Okay, and I am getting the link right now. I'm sure this is riveting for everybody listening.
It's fantastic. And Nick, if while we're getting the link from Steven, if people want to find you on the internet, what's the best way to stalk you?
Oh, I made it super simple. At Nick Garber Art on pretty much every social media platform. So go into Twitter, at Nick Garber Art. You go to Facebook, at Nick Garber Art. You go to Instagram, at Nick Garber Art. And also don't forget to check out at Apogee Comics, which you'll find on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as well.
We see more naked pictures of you from the waist up?
I don't want to rule it out. I kind of want to hit the gym for about 6 months, maybe take steroids. I don't know. Maybe eat healthier. I don't know. But until they make broccoli taste like a double bacon cheeseburger, I think I'm stuck with this dad bod for a while.
We're going to go with the variant cover kind of thing where we're going to release one body part in a series of 10, and then everybody can put it together in a nice collage.
Well, I was thinking of doing the George Costanza couch picture, but with a cowboy hat and a holster and a six shooter.
That's majestic.
I just want to let everybody know that apogeecomics.net is up and running. It is excellent. A very bare bones website right now. We're going to be constantly improving it and developing it. But right now, the store is open. The character page is open if you want to start diving in a little bit more in the Apogee universe. If it's your first time, we kind of give you a good once over. Each the big three right now have their own little character page. So you can read more about Phantom Hawk. You can read more about the Crimson Guardians of the Cardinal, and you can read more about Bengali, and up and coming will be Corvid and Sparrow. I'll release that when we get into that crowdfunding campaign, because we're always, you know, trying to put out new content. So
right on.
So shameless plug for Apogee, which I always do on the show. And thank you, Walt, for always giving me that opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're huge fans. There's a stack right behind me, and that top third is all you, bro.
Ooh, music to my ears.
Right. So I got everything you've ever produced. So keep them coming.
Hell yeah. Keep breeding them. I'll keep making them.
Steven, I just wanted to say thank you for coming on the show and give us a little insight on Dusty Tortillas. If this goes into an issue too, can we have you back on to talk up more Wild West splatter action?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for sharing your platform with us. I had an excellent time, and I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Nick, thanks as always, brother. It's always great to have you.
Always happy.
So on behalf of the BAM Podcast and the Indie Creative Spotlight, this has been for the Ballad of Dusty Tortillas. So please go to Indiegogo right now. Type in the Ballad of Dusty Tortillas. Let's get this funded so that we can stop Nick from having to pose to shamelessly plug this thing. Thank you very much. And BAMF, we are out.